Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by thesoberclub.com. I'm Genuinely Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quitlet authors, and sober heroes. Hi, and welcome to the podcast. I hope you've had a good week. We've had a really lovely week in the Sober Club. We had John Siddiqui do an exclusive meditation session for us. Just so great. John has been a podcast guest. You've probably heard him before, and you will have heard him on Insight Timer. He's a top spiritual guru and expert, and of course, author of the great book, Signposts of the Spiritual Journey, which I hadn't realised is not even out yet. It's out next week, I think. I feel like I've been talking about it for ages. It's a really good book. I'll put the link in the show notes. But John did a session for us in the Sober Club, and it was just so helpful that he helped us to kind of recognise that everyone can meditate. You know, it's not about being locked to whatever you think meditation is. It can be whatever it is for you, but the act of rocking up for meditation, that's self-care. And he did this kind of great example for us that everyone could relate to. It was super useful. So I'm very grateful to him. We do some great stuff in the Sober Club, though I say so myself. I'm really proud of it. We really have got some amazing experts that pop in and offer us sessions. We've got something coming up with Joe from Beyond NLP as well. Joe's going to do a session for us. In fact, I'm pretty sure we're going to do a session with Joe, who is a queen of NLP. I did my training with Joe, and I'm pretty sure we're going to do a session around avoiding hitting the fuck it button, which I thought would be a great topic, not just around drink, because, you know, of course, there are going to be many people who, as we come closer to Christmas, are just going to, oh, fuck it. You know, who cares? I know I've committed to whatever, 100 days. I know I'm doing really well, allegedly. Oh, fuck it. So how do we get over that? And it might be something else. It might be that you've committed to another behaviour change and you really just want to press on through that. It's about doing what we've said we want to do, right, rather than what we have to do or what we're forced to do. So Joe's going to do a session for us in the club on that as well. So if you haven't already, obviously check it out, thesoberclub.com. It's a small monthly membership fee. It includes masses of amazing stuff and a great community. So do check it out if you haven't already. Another reminder, this will be the last reminder, I guess, of our Family Constellations Day, which is happening on Sunday, 28th of November. It's just such a difficult one to explain. I don't know how you really explain constellations. It's one of those where you just have to go, listen, just can you just trust me? Just come along and experience it for yourself. The first time I went, I really had no idea. But it's so transformational. It's so healing to be in that space where you get to feel compassion and you just get to understand what other people are going through, and you get to understand the importance of what happened to you, you know, when you were small. And again, as I've said before, that's trauma with a big T, but it's also trauma with a little T, because there are plenty of people who think, oh, everything's good, you know, I wasn't abused as a child, therefore everything's completely fine. But there's so many nuances here, and it could be also the inherited family trauma. Again, lots of people listen to the podcast with Mark Wolin. I'm really so blessed to get that interview. He's just brilliant. I absolutely love his book. Anyways, have a look. It's very difficult to describe it, but have a look at some of the stuff we have. I did ask a Sober Club member to share her experience from a constellation session. So obviously, if you have a read of that, you've heard me talk about my experience on the podcast. And if you are in the UK and you're able to get to that, there's still some tickets left. We'd absolutely love you to come along. It's Sunday, 28th of November. If you go to thesoberclub.com and click on events, you can find the information there. And you can always DM me, you know, or message me if you've got any questions. I'm so thrilled that my guest today is Zoe Clues. She is a queen of hypnotherapy, works with a whole team of people. And I saw some posts that Chloe had done, and I realised that this is someone who has really got a grasp on how each of us can take back some control when we're feeling anxious, when we're feeling stressed. And God knows there's a lot of that right now. And, you know, I just think it's just great to be able to have someone who hugely successful in her field, but is so generous, giving us just, you know, ideas of what we can do just in the moment. So I really hope you enjoy the interview.
I'm really pleased that my guest is Zoe Clues, is a clinical hypnotherapist, mental health campaigner, businesswoman. Oh, I mean, the list goes on. It's so lovely to interview you, to chat to you, Zoe. I've heard some of your stuff. I've heard you on the radio and I've seen a bit of the bits and bobs that you do. But just share with us what you do at Zoe Clues Hypnotherapy.
Yeah, thank you, Jane. It's great to be here. So I'm a hypnotherapist, have been for 19 years this month, actually. So I am kind of a consummate generalist and I work with all manner of issues. But I decided to specialise in anxiety, PTSD, complex PTSD, depression, self-esteem. Hypnosis is like a master tool. I think it's just such a phenomenal tool. You know, you can use it for pretty much anything. And I've built a team around me. So there's 10 of us all together. And we have, what I wanted to do was create kind of like a one-stop shop in London for all emotional and psychological issues. Because whilst we can, in hypnotherapy, you can work with many areas, it's great to specialise. But, you know, I didn't want to sort of niche so much that I was cutting off, you know, a lot of people's different issues. So I've got two fantastic sex coaches. They're absolutely amazing. One of them works with couples, one of them works with singles. And I've got a relationship hypnotherapist, an addiction specialist, a children's therapist, a baby sleep specialist. So the list goes on, really. But it's basically just encapsulating. So whatever it is that you have, you know, one of our team is likely to be able to help you with that.
Why do you think there is so much need for this at the moment? I mean, I think there's two things we can talk about. I think one is the fact that obviously so many people are feeling so much more anxiety and uncertainty all the time, but also the fact that for many years the stuff that you offer, it's just not been readily available, has it? It's not something we can access easily.
No, exactly. And, you know, it's multi-layered, it's sort of vast and complex. You know, I spoke about concern about mental health issues, you know, long before obviously the pandemic hit, and talked about underfunding in these areas. And what I've seen in the sort of last 19 months or so is, you know, well, for a start, people who had underlying issues, obviously these were exacerbated greatly. And also, I've also seen a lot of people who didn't have any underlying issues, who'd never experienced anxiety before. Obviously, we're all capable of experiencing anxiety because we're all sort of, to a certain extent, built the same way. But people have had different experiences, they've had different backgrounds. Some people have trauma in their background, some people have had adverse experiences as adults. But, you know, there may be people that, you know, pre-pandemic and lockdown hadn't really experienced a huge amount of adversity in life. So then, of course, it becomes really shocking to the system. Mm. And we're all capable of experiencing anxiety. Obviously, we need anxiety. It stops us from sticking our hand in a fire or something, for example. But, you know, one of the models that I work, which I think is really useful because everybody seems to be able to relate to it, is something called the four Fs, which is the four physiological defense mechanisms. So everybody's heard of fight and flight. So that's sort of hyper arousal. But there's also two other defense mechanisms that we have, which are called freeze and fawn. That's fawn, F-A-W-N, like a little deer. So fight and flight. So obviously, if we talk about flight, we talk about anxiety, catastrophizing. Under that umbrella, the flight umbrella would come insomnia, OCD, constant checking. And obviously, with everything that's happened in the last 2 years, a lot of people have health anxiety. There's a lovely gentleman called Professor Spada who's discovered sort of COVID anxiety syndrome. So we have that. Generalized anxiety disorder, panic disorder, these all come under the flight umbrella. And then we have fight, obviously, and that's things like everyone raging on social media, road rage, constantly, getting angry with people, trying to control things. And that's the sort of hyper arousal state. And we all get angry. We all, you know, get anxious. We need to defend our territory or to run away from situations or to work out what to do. We need to do that, but we also need to come out of that. And if you're in fight or flight for too long, that's sort of hyper arousal, your system is hyper aroused, then what happens is you drop into either freeze or fawn. Now, freeze is that sort of depressive state. So if you think about freeze, you think about when duvet days become duvet weeks, it's depression, it's apathy, it's a lack of motivation, it's pointlessness, I can't be bothered, it's all of that stuff. And then fawn is on the other side, is that feeling of powerlessness. So that's where we see ourselves unable to set boundaries, unable to say no, acquiescing, just kind of rolling over in all situations. So what happened with, the point of me saying this, is that we all kind of go in and out of them, if you like, all, a bit all day. And we, again, freeze and fawn are helpful. Sometimes we need to stop. We need to freeze and think what's going on. Sometimes we need to mediate a situation, acquiesce, and just sort of make things, smooth things over. But what the pandemic did, what lockdown's done, is that it shunted many of us into those states pretty much kind of in a chronic way, sort of not, it's not permanent, but it feels permanent when you're in them. And the other thing about these states, when you're in fight or flight or freeze or fawn, they're built in a way they convince you to stay there. So when you're catastrophizing and panic buying would come under the flight umbrella, when you're catastrophizing, your mind will tell you you need to stay there, that you need to keep googling and searching, or you know, whatever it is that you're doing, checking your symptoms. So one of the things that can be really helpful with all of this is to sort of understand which one you're in and realize that it's about bringing yourself. It's a good sort of marker, if you like, to bring yourself back into place called, it's called psychologically the window of tolerance. And that's where you sort of feel a bit more reasonable and sort of sane in your own self, if you like. It's where you rest well, digest well. It's where you make good decisions from. And I'm always working with clients, letting them know to try not to make decisions unless you have to, when you're in one of these states. So if you're in flight, you tend to panic buy, you make decisions really quickly that you might regret later on. If you're in fight, you might send a really angry email. If you're in freeze, you tend to judge your life really negatively, think there's no point and think it's going to be like that forever. In fawn, you might agree to things that you don't want to because you feel so disempowered. So one of the tools is, you know, let's look at where our window of tolerance is and let's do what we can, you know, use the tools to bring yourself back into that place. And you'll know where you're there when you're there, because your mind feels more rested. You have more clarity. You feel a bit calmer about everything. You don't feel so, you know, ragey or, you know, catastrophizing. So yes, going back to that, one of the reasons lockdown was so intense and the pandemic and all the restrictions and everything else and our responses to everything going on was that a lot of us got stuck in that state. So I've seen a lot of people who didn't really have anxiety before. And it's really scary when you haven't had, anxiety, when you get stuck in that anxiety, it's terrifying, you know, when you first experience that. Because one of the symptoms of, well, I always say two of the worst symptoms, and I'm not minimizing any of the other symptoms here, but one of the worst symptoms of anxiety or depression is the belief that it will always be like that.
Yeah.
Because anything is tolerable, isn't it? If, you know, pretty much anything is tolerable, childbirth, for example, if you know that there's an end.
Yeah.
But the thing is, it's a real killer because it's one of the symptoms of it. So a lot of my work, when I'm working with people who are in anxiety or deep depression, or enormous amount of pain and suffering, is to let them know that this will pass, you know.
Yeah.
And you're not going to flip out of it. You're not going to go from A to Z. It's going to go, you know, you're probably going to start to feel slightly less awful, first of all. Not the spark list of promises, but you know, the realistic one.
Yeah.
I always say to people, don't search for happiness when you feel like this. Search for relief. We're looking for relief, and relief in healthy ways, not relief through 3 bottles of wine a night. You know?
Well, yeah. Which is
one of the problems of lockdown, right?
Well, you know, absolutely. So many. I mean, this really resonates with me because, you know, I've seen it with just so many. I mean, I've definitely been in all of those states, yeah, off and on a lot.
Yeah, exactly. But 10 minutes, right?
Yeah, yeah. And sometimes I think, you know, sometimes more than others, you know, and I look back and I think, actually, do you know what? That's not like me to have that level of sort of inertia and, yes, you know, that fawn thing, as you say. But, you know, I've had a lot of clients who have were feeling really sort of as if they were getting on top of things, and then lockdown hit and they went back to drinking even though they'd stopped, and they just then, you know, it's this thing of doesn't feel like there's any hope. And I think it's that lack of hope that really, really gets people. What I'd love to ask you about, I mean, I've spoken about it before on the podcast, but I'm always really fascinated with if people can explain something I find really difficult to explain, and that is you know, the different layers and levels of anxiety and depression, and then clinical depression. It's a really tough one. A lot of the people I work with find that they, for example, they stop drinking, they start becoming a bit more aware of their own health and well-being, so they start eating a bit better, perhaps exercising. And then you might be, and for many people, they get to a point a few months down the line where they do start to feel balanced and everything starts to feel good.
and they start to feel a sense of joy again. And that's the amazing bit. But of course, there are other, I have other clients who will get, I don't know, perhaps 9 months, a year down the line, and they'll say, why aren't I feeling good? Why am I still feeling flat? And, you know, and it's a really interesting one. And then there are other people who, particularly women, who've rocked up to a GP with menopausal symptoms and said, you know, I've got mood swings, I've got this and that. And they come out with sometimes HRT, but almost always with antidepressants.
Yeah.
But they're still drinking, by the way. Mm. So I'm not even quite sure what the question is, but do with it what you will.
I think it's really interesting. So, you know, my take on this, there's so many ways of kind of, you know, obviously I'm not a psychologist, so I wouldn't necessarily, you know, diagnose with clinical depression. I don't really diagnose people. I work from a very sort of trauma-informed perspective, if you like, and I'm always looking at, you know, okay, why hasn't something shifted? Why is it all here? So someone can make all of the necessary, really powerful, you know, life-affirming changes, like you say, deciding, you know, to live in a live soberly, all manner of ways of supporting themselves. Now, you know, what I would say to that is that, you know, people will often think, well, this is the answer. If I just meditate, if I just do yoga, if I do this, then, and often there's a lot of improvement. You know, things are better, life becomes much more manageable. For some people, there's this wonderful feeling that that's what they needed to do. I've got so many friends that live soberly, and, you know, they say it's, you know, sort of changed their lives, and it's been such a wonderful thing, and I've seen them flourish and blossom. And also, you know, I'll work with people who have made certain lifestyle changes, and they can feel that it feels much better. However, they notice that they're still not quite accessing joy, if you like, things like that. And the way I see it is this, is as I've got a holistic view to this, is that anxiety, the mind is like the body. If something's wrong, it will let you know.
Yeah.
So anxiety and depression are often a sign from you to you that something needs to be looked at, and it's subconscious. So I always quote Carl Jung on this, because this is really the basis of my work. But Carl Jung says all neurosis, if you like, has its reason in legitimate suffering. So neurosis is a horrible word. It sounds judgmental, but that's the one he used. So I'll sort of explain it in those terms. So let's say that, you know, we have this anxiety or depression. That's how it's manifested in the conscious mind. Now, sometimes anxiety and depression are a response to your environment. And so that's a sign from your body to you that this situation isn't right for you. Maybe it's a toxic relationship. Maybe you're ensnared in some sort of toxic relationship with your boss. Maybe the work that you're doing isn't really supporting you. But sometimes, you know, things are okay, and things are fine, sort of, you know, in the present now. But there's this underlying feeling that you can't shift. So sometimes, you know, often you need to sort of look a bit deeper. Okay, what's going on here? And the thing that's sort of still not, we have all this mental health awareness now, which is fantastic. It's so much better than 20 years ago. It's great. But what I think is maybe changing a little bit now, but what there isn't enough awareness is of trauma and the impact that it does. And people think of trauma, they think, you know, many of my clients will come and see me and I'll sort of talk about how, you know, they obviously experienced trauma in this situation. And they've never seen that as trauma, because people always see trauma as, you know, it has to be something really severe and really, really big. But trauma can be, you just didn't receive the adequate nurturing and love from your caregivers and the healthy mirroring that you needed.
Yeah.
Now, if you don't receive that, because, you know, as a child, you know, you get your sense of self, it's reflected back, you need that healthy mirroring from a caregiver. And if you don't get that for whatever reason, their caregiver was emotionally unavailable, they had an addiction issues of themselves, they're carrying their own layers of generational trauma, if you like, or they were working on this, there's a myriad of reasons, then that child starts to learn that somehow that they're not okay, that they're defective, that they're unworthy, that they're not good enough. Now, anything that happens before the age of 9 is super important, because we don't really have a conscious mind until the age of 9. So everything that happens to us, we're like a little sponge, we just absorb it and it goes in. And then we come to belief about ourselves. We sort of separate from our true nature, if you like, and we come to belief, you know, the classics, I'm not good enough. It's the human condition, isn't it? You know, and when I started working as a hypnotherapist, I was like, wow, every single person feels like this. It's kind of that somehow they're not good enough. So we start to feel like we're not good enough, we're defective, and whether we might feel ashamed, you know, shame's underneath a lot of stuff, including anxiety and depression. So then we think to ourselves, well, I don't want to see that. So then we create, if you like, okay, well, I'll become successful. I'll do this. I'll get this thin, or I'll get the boyfriend, I'll get the car, or whatever the house, whatever it is, then everything will feel okay. I'll get the job. And then what we're doing is sort of working to cover up that shame, which was never really ours to begin with. It's because we didn't get our adequate needs met in the first place. And then we can get all of the externals, the baubles, if you like, and then but still there's this underlying feeling that somehow we're not good enough, that we just don't feel good.
Yeah.
And then we can make lifestyle changes on top of that. And we can go, well, I'm doing all the right things. I'm going to yoga, I'm not drinking, I'm eating really healthily, but still I've got this feeling. Now, if that's still going on, then it's worth looking at what's going on underneath. And usually it's some sort of toxic beliefs you came to about yourself when you were really small, through no fault of your own. I always say shame is blame turned inwards. And we're often carrying a lot of stuff. We're carrying stuff for our caregivers, we're carrying conditioning, we might have been bullied at school, all manner of things can have happened. But when you've made all the right changes in your lifestyle to support yourself, but still there's anxiety and depression, then it's one, you've got to look at your environment and have another look and say, okay, is this serving me? But two, it's probably, but you know, probably the first port of call is, okay, let's look a bit deeper at what's going on, because often it's really old. You know, it's the subconscious doesn't understand time. So if we come to a belief, if we're bullied as a kid, we come to a belief, I'm unacceptable, I'm not good enough, we think it's about us. And then that stays there. That belief sits there, insidiously affecting pretty much everything. This is what imposter syndrome is as well. People always talk about imposter syndrome, and it's because we didn't feel good enough. So then we created, you know, we're like, right, I'm going to go for it. I'm going to get this job and be really successful and create my own business. We've got all of this stuff. And everybody responds to it and goes, wow, aren't you doing well? But we don't really feel that, because we're responding to really old beliefs about ourselves inside. And of course, it's a block to intimacy as well, because if we're carrying a lot of shame, then it prevents us from, you know, wanting to be seen in a relationship as well. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, it's a very long answer to your question, but it's always worth a deeper dive. What's going on here? Because depression is pain turned inwards.
Yeah.
And anxiety is a sign, often, if it's not to do with your environment and it's not to do with your lifestyle, it's a sign from your subconscious that there's stuff that hasn't been processed. And the other thing about anxiety is this, is that it's often a lid. Underneath anxiety and depression too, actually, is often a whole load of unprocessed grief, trauma, rage, sadness.
Yeah.
You know, and once you get into that work, you know, a lot of time the work I do is grief work, which doesn't sound very appealing. If I advertised it like that, no one would come, right? But underneath, a lot of the time, under OCD or body dysmorphia disorder, or relationship issues, there's a lot of unprocessed grief. And like I said, it doesn't have to be big T trauma. It can just be a sort of chronic sort of situation where you just didn't get your needs met over a long period of time.
Absolutely. And that, you know, I totally get that, and I'm really aware of the, you know, all the issues around trauma. I've just trained in family constellations, so
I love family constellations.
I'm absolutely loving it. It's wonderful, but
life-changing.
It completely life-changing. It literally changed my life, literally. But I think that this is where it starts to get so interesting, when you when you really realize all of this, and then see people who are just doing the medication bit. I'm not saying that people don't need medication, of course you know, they do in many cases, but it's a real travesty, isn't it, that someone could be feeling like this and expect that just a pot of pills will sort it.
Well, yeah, I think the thing is, with medication, it saves lives. Like you said, it's really important, and it really does help people. And I think it's fantastic to do both, you know, because the thing with the medication, it can get you up and about, it can get you motivated again, and can get you, you know, stopping panic attacks. It can get you living your life. So, but I think it's always, you know, it's also important to investigate in with someone really, a really safe therapist or whatever, to slowly start to unpack what drove it in the first place. I don't think we just have anxiety and depression for no reason. I think it's a response to things that happen to us. And often we've got no idea what that is. I don't mean that we discover things that happen to us. You know, I've never had that happen once in 20 years, but more that we don't realise how the things that we've gone through have actually
impacted.
We have no idea. You know, I work with clients all the time, and they're like, I had no idea that experience of, you know, the teacher shaming them or something has stayed with me all this time. And obviously we do the emotional release in a really safe way, we unpack it, and there's a lot of relief. You know, what we're searching for is relief from depression and anxiety, but relief in a safe and healthy way.
Yeah, absolutely. So can you give us any tips of any kind of little things that any of us can do that can help us feel a little bit better in the moment?
Of course, yeah. Well, I'm going to go back to this fight, flight, freeze, fawn thing because I just think it's so great. So it's worth noticing which one you're in. Okay, so if you're speeding up, you're getting really adrenalized, you start to catastrophize. Okay, so you, in a way, there's self-care for each of them, okay?
Yeah.
So different activities for each of the, when we're not feeling good, we're in one of the states, undoubtedly. So if we're in flight, anxious, catastrophizing, panicking, what we tend to do, the behaviors which reinforce the state are checking, feeling like we need to do something. When you're in flight, it will tell you, you need to act now. And there are genuine times when you do. However, a lot of the time our flight states are getting triggered and there's nothing we can do. We're constantly watching news, social media. Turn off all kind of stimulation, if you like. You need to down-regulate when you're in fight or flight. And those things are talking to someone who's safe, talking about how you feel, reminding yourself of the state that you're in. Because a lot of anxiety, a lot of recovery from anxiety is about your self-talk, about self-parenting. I'm sure you know about this one already, but it's like, yeah, talk to yourself out loud if you have to.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I think it's interesting to you just mentioned, I forget exactly how you put it, but effectively acknowledge what's going on, because often we don't actually even acknowledge that this is happening. We're just in this terrible panicky state, but actually we probably need to tell ourselves something is triggering me right now, or I am upset about this. And sometimes just stating it.
Yes, and say it out loud. It doesn't matter. You only have to say, okay, right now I'm in that flight place. And when you're in fight or flight, the mantra is, before you do something, do nothing. Because if you're in fight and someone sends you an angry email and you fire one back, you can look back at, you wait 24 hours, you know. You don't have to. Well, I think worse than a WhatsApp argument is there, or say, not quite fast enough. But flight as well, and the anxiety, because you know the anxiety is that state that feels really, really unbearable. It's like, so you need to down regulate. So it's grounding. Say to yourself, right now, right here, in this moment, I am okay.
Yeah.
Because we try to control everything when we're in fight or flight. And a lot of the time these things, sometimes we just don't know. We have to be sort of a little bit comfortable with uncertainty, don't we, at the moment. And it's about self-parenting, talking to yourself. Sit there and have a cup of tea with your feelings. Okay. And talk to yourself like you would. It's all about self-talk. Talk to yourself how you would, that you were trying, because you need to talk yourself down, sort of love yourself down from that state. Because when you're in flight, high anxiety, it will convince you need to stay there. It's a self-perpetuating, self-feeding monster, if you like.
Yeah.
So it's about talking yourself down, have a cup of tea with your feelings, take a break, step away from all the things that are triggering you, the social media, the news, conversations with friends, whatever it is that's going on. And, you know, obviously, if you need to reach out to someone or something, this is an obvious one, but I'm going to say it anyway, because what we often need, if we don't have that self-parenting inner adult voice, which takes a while to build up, it took me ages to build mine up, that can calm, you know, we become our own therapist, right? So we can calm ourselves down. It's okay, love, you'll be all right, have a cup of tea, sit down. If you don't have that, then it's in internally yet, and we can all build it up, and that's part of recovery from anything. If you don't have that yet, then reach out to someone who does have that might actually be your mum or dad. It might be a really good friend, it might be your partner, it might be a therapist, it might be a helpline. But it's about talking yourself down. So fight or flight is hyper arousal, so we need to down regulate. And then if we're in freeze, which is that sort of can't get out of bed. And the other thing I'll say about freeze as well is that if we're in fight or flight for long enough, it will drop into freeze because our nervous system has to protect itself by shutting down. Now, if the same thing, but it can, there's a shortcut there as well. If you have a big enough shock, you will bypass fight or flight and go straight into freeze. You know, people are sort of KO'd with something. And a lot of people, that's what happened when we first went into lockdown. I think a lot of people just went straight into like, what's the point? You know, just the overwhelm. They just shut down and numbing out. So freeze is about up-regulating activity. So it's about dancing, exercise, getting out in nature, really, you know, sort of supporting yourself to be energized in a good way. And with fawn, which is the stuff around boundaries, so it's things like, you know, working with, you know, someone to help you with your assertiveness, your people pleasing, looking at codependence. So if somebody says to you, can you do this, and you feel a strong no, but you're so sort of almost a compulsively conditioned to say yes, just start by saying let me sleep on it, you know, start setting boundaries in small ways, because I think it's really important to notice which one of the states you're in and then use the appropriate help techniques. And actually, you can use some of the states to help you out of the others. Sometimes getting angry can get you out of freeze. You know, like, I'm not putting up with this. I'm going to fight for what I believe in. And sometimes you need to stop. So you can use some of the states, if you like, to remind yourself of what's helpful about them all. Because they're all helpful, but we get stuck in them. That's the problem.
I'm just going to pause there just for one moment, just to leave a little gap, because there's an ad goes in.
Okay.
So I'm with Zoe Clues, and we're talking about hypnotherapy and all these amazing ways we can just help ourselves a little bit to, as you say, as we were talking about, Zoe, just to feel a bit more in the moment. We hear a lot about mindfulness. You know, to what extent does that link in? Is this about being able to be present?
Yes, I mean, being present obviously is really important. Just going back to that little mantra that can be really helpful when you're in high anxiety is just, you know, right now, right here, in this present moment, I'm safe. Yeah. I would say anxiety is what if, and depression is it is. But depression is it is in a really final sort of slamming way. It sort of tells you that, you know, you're worthless or life is over. It'll always be like this in a really authoritarian tone. The other thing worth looking at is your inner voice. So, you know, this is really important. If I could surgically remove people's inner critic, I'd be a billionaire.
Wouldn't that be great?
Yeah, I need to put Elon Musk or something at some point. But it is, you know, watching how you talk to yourself. And there's loads of little hacks you can do here. So because it's the inner voice, really, that will drive you into a panic state. You must do this now. You're in danger. You know, your life is awful. You're worthless. It's the inner critic that is the inner voice. Now, often we have a really, really loud inner voice if there is a lot of unresolved, you're unprocessed. There's a lot of stuff that you need to process underneath it. It also gets really loud when you're triggered into fight, flight, freeze, or fawn. You know, it will be particularly pernicious in the freeze state, I think, but in flight it will send you into a bit of a frenzy, really, and you know, that's when we start to get really panicky. So it's learning that you are wiser than that voice. You know, that's the super ego, it's the inner critic, and telling it to shut up, swearing at it, not today Satan is my favorite one, you know, also learning to take it less seriously. You know, it's not, if you listen to it, it's kind of like, it's not what it says to you, it's the tone of it that's the killer.
Yeah.
So if you repeat the words in a kind of voice that you can't take seriously, like, I don't know, like a cartoon voice or something, then it kind of loses its authority and it's starting to separate out from it. And I think mindfulness is great for that, starting to separate out, because we often, people are so enmeshed with their inner critic that they believe that that's who they are. They think that that's the truth, that this narrative in their head is the truth of who they are, and it's just not. It's kind of like your inner critic, but like your conscience has got mixed in with loads of trauma, and it becomes this really shaming sort of pole-axing kind of inner voice, really. And it's, you know, it can devastate people's lives. So it's really worth working with that, because that can whip you into frenzy of anxiety. It can, you know, send you into depression. It can stop you from doing things. It can drive you to do things that you look back and think, why on earth did I do that? So it's learning to separate out from inner voice and reminding that you are wiser than it. It's sneaky, you know, it's kind of a lifetime's work getting that one down, but you can really, really get it down. Mine's terrible now, it's kind of like it just nags.
But as you say, noticing it is everything, isn't it? You know, when you can sort of interrupt, you know, put the pause in and actually notice, and as you say, put it in a silly voice and say, well, you know, is that actually true? What's just been said, is that true? I really am useless, or whatever it is you're telling me?
I know. It's such a buzzkill as well, isn't it? It's kind of, give it syllables, put a wig on it as well, you know, make it look ridiculous so you just can't take it seriously. And ask yourself, I mean, this is an obvious one, but would I speak to anyone else like this?
Exactly.
Most of us would never. And also, think about it. If we had someone that was actually following us around saying that, we would have KO'd them, wouldn't we?
Yeah, exactly.
Years ago, I hope.
I love that that concept. I can't remember who came up with it, but talking about the fact that you can only actually have a really negative thought for about 90 seconds, and then you've got to recreate it. And actually, we do have an opportunity to choose a different thought rather than recreating yet another shit one.
Yeah, exactly. And the other thing as well is like writing down a list of your own, you know, if it really attacks your self-esteem, just write down a list of your positive qualities. It's a really practical thing. And if you struggle to do that, because some people do, you know, they honestly can't find anything nice about themselves, which is not because there isn't nice, but it's because their inner critic has been, you know, running the show for so long, then ask your friend or someone else to do that and carry it around with you. And that's a little tool against, you know, the inner critic, which is with its relentless tirade. But I think it's always worth clearing out what's underneath as well, because it will undoubtedly turn the volume right down on the inner critic.
Absolutely. It's so great to chat to you, Zoe. We could really, honestly, so many things. I could keep you for hours on this, really.
it's
fascinating stuff. So just tell us a little bit about the work that your team does and where we can find you.
Yeah, of course. So we are, my website address is www.zoe-hypnotherapy.co.uk. So we're a team of 10 and we are therapists, hypnotherapists and coaches. So it's providing a bit of a one-stop shop for all emotional and psychological issues. So I work with complex PTSD, PTSD, trauma, anxiety, depression, self-esteem. Got someone who works with weight management, self-esteem too. I've got two fabulous sex coaches, one of whom works with couples, the other with singles. I have, we're covering all bases, really.
Fiction. I'm guessing you've seen in the last, you know, sort of year and a half or whatever, you must have seen a rise in people with sort of PTSD or, you know, trauma kind of going on.
And a lot of very anxious children.
I was listening to Dr. Renee Henderkamp the other day, the GP.
She's
amazing. And I was hearing her, it was just really sad because she was talking about the fact that in her GP surgery, she's seen so many more children, young children, mm-hmm. who were completely fine. And now they're suffering from extreme anxiety as to what they might be doing, you know, potentially killing granny or whatever. This is terrible what's happening to children. And the other thing that really worries me, and again, I don't know if it comes under your remit, but, you know, I've got friends with children with, you know, really quite severe mental health issues. And the waiting list is something like 2 years to see CAMHS. What is that about?
I know it's, I mean, it was, mental health was really
before.
A terrible place before.
Yeah.
It was completely turned the screw on. I said in September last year, I'm very, very concerned that we're kind of installing OCDs, agoraphobia, social anxiety, health anxiety in children, in these young and tender psyches. You know, we're purely in our subconscious, you know, and I have worked with a lot of the parents there with the child, but I've worked with a lot more children than usual that are really worried about things like mummy and daddy dying, who would never have, you know, you only really have that if you, as a child, if you've lost someone around you, because, you know, again, things don't come from, you know, things don't just land on us from the sky. You know, we have things like OCD and extreme phobias because of something that's happened to us. It's an old wound. We fear what's already happened. So these children are getting these constant, unrelenting fear messaging. Well, we all have, haven't we? But for children, the children are the ones I feel especially sorry for, because there's been relentless fear messaging. And of course, there's a result. And the parents have done their absolute best to protect children. But, you know, children aren't resilient. This thing about, you know, I wrote a blog about this, you know, you stop believing the lie that children are resilient. They're not resilient, you know. They are open, they're little sponges. And, you know, people have done amazing jobs protecting their children from everything that is going on. But we have to understand that, you know, when children are exposed to things, they're going to be impacted by it.
Yeah.
I'm well aware of things like the waiting list, because I've spoken to so many people. I've spoken to people on Twitter, I've spoken to people in, you know, and I do some pro bono work that's full at the moment, but it's kind of, it's difficult. One of the things, I just sort of run a free mental health clinic last year online just to sort of help people with lockdown and stuff, and I'm thinking of doing another one. I'm just sort of working on that at the moment just to support people, because I think it's going to be a difficult winter, isn't it? And it's kind of I think that people people are dealing with feelings of powerlessness.
Yes, absolutely.
Powerlessness. Yeah. And that's a really tricky one. That's
it not, is. I know. It's a really interesting emotion, isn't it? Just that uncertainty of everything. I've got about three things I'm trying to book at the moment, and I can't make myself pick up the phone. I can't do it because something's stopping me. You know, it's just. Yeah. I would never have been like that in the past. It's it's a very interesting kind of dynamic. Well, it's a very sad note to end on, but thank you so much. And let us know if you do if you do put on the free mental health clinic. I definitely
I'm working on that moment. And I think we're talking about a sad note, but I think it's worth mentioning that I do believe we'll come all through all of this. And there is post traumatic growth. We also have post traumatic growth. And nothing as resilient as human spirit.
That's a nice expression. I like that.
Yeah.
Post-traumatic growth. Okay.
Post-traumatic growth. Yeah, I did a blog on that recently. That's up. We'll find a way through, because there is, with all of this comes an enormous amount of growth. And that's not to minimise anyone's suffering at all. It's just to say, I think it's really important that we have hope as well at the moment. Mm.
Yeah, definitely. Zoe Clues, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Okay. Thanks, Janie. Bye.
Thank you, Zoe. I really appreciate that. Some fantastic tips there. I really love the way, Zoe explained, the whole fight, flight, freeze, fawn. It's so true of all of us. I've really been noticing my own reactions to things since that conversation. And of course, the power of connection. It really is the key. It really is sharing what's going on with somebody else who gets it. That's not necessarily your partner. We had someone in the Sober Club who was doing really, really well what she said she wants to do. I think she's, 3 weeks in or something. But she went through this kind of phase of a bit really wanting validation from a family member. And it became the most important thing, that she got the validation for what she was doing, for ditching the booze, from this family member. And so she was having this sort of big build up to, when I go and see this family member, she's going to be so proud of me. It's going to be this. It's going to be that. Well, you know what? It might not be. Sometimes those closest to us surprise us in that they're not supportive. And it's not they mean any harm, but you don't know what's going on for them. So actually, just to be seeking validation from the person closest to you or from your immediate family or even friends may not be the answer in the early months. I've really learned this the hard way. I felt very lonely. I wasn't connected at all. I didn't do any of the stuff that I tell you to do. I didn't know back then. And I went through a phase of being just incensed and furious that my husband, once I'd actually told him I was ditching the booze, I didn't tell him for ages, but once I'd actually told him, I was just incensed that he wasn't buying me soberversary cards and God knows what. It's not his thing. It was my thing. And I really think that the key here is to connect with people who get it, people who've been through the same experience, who know what a massive deal it is, and they've had their own ups and downs and their own feeling of being completely out on a limb and really nervous and wobbly and chaotic and all of the stuff that may or may not happen to you in the early weeks. But it's worth it. And when you're connected with people who've been through this, then you catch sight of that inspiration. So even when you're going through the hard stuff, you can connect with someone who can say, listen, sweetheart, that happened to me too, but look at me now. And that's what's just so great about the Sober Club. I know I keep banging on about it, but it is. It's happening all the time. People managing to do what they've said they wanted to do. And we just have so many lovely posts from people saying, there was one yesterday from one of our members saying, I'm 18 months sober. Who would have thought it? I'm a completely different person, completely different. And also don't forget, I do offer one-to-one coaching. I've got extremely limited slots, but if that's something that resonates with you, I had an absolutely lovely testimonial yesterday. Someone who said to me, who wrote, I'll just read you a tiny bit of this. She said, Janie breaks down thoughts and thinking patterns that we form, putting into focus the real truth behind why and what is actually going on when we drink, and more importantly, how we can be free from it. With the help of the Quitlet reading, and Janie's podcast and being part of the Sober Club. I feel supported and have an amazing connection group to help me. That's it, isn't it, really? It's having a cheerleader. Everybody needs a cheerleader, right? If the Sober Club's not for you, there'll be something else. It doesn't matter which way you come to this. But if a little voice in your head is saying, oh God, I've listened to these podcasts and I know I need to do it and maybe I should do it and shan't I? Yes, just do it. And if you need someone to tell, you can absolutely tell me. So do check out the Family Constellations event Sunday, 28th of November. That I may be hosting something on December the 16th in London. It'll just be a very low-key social, so you might want to mark that in your diary. We do have Champneys coming up in January the 8th. That's at Tring in Hertfordshire. There will be more Sober by the Sea events if people are interested in those. And I'm also doing Champneys in Champney Springs, which is in Leicestershire. So, you know, a little bit further up country. I've got a lot of people saying, can we do stuff in the north? But it's just a little bit further up. That's the end of February. So if you have a look at the show notes or you go to soberclub.com, you'll find all the info there. Whatever's going on for you, I wish you a great week. Stay connected. You can always follow me on social media. You can always send a message. And I'll see you same time next week. Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast brought to you by The Sober Club. Please rate and review. And if you want support, accountability and inspiration, and you want to live your best life without the booze, check out thesoberclub.com.